The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
So if you got the crosshairs, you got the laser, you can put it right on my chest. I'll take full responsibility. I'm raising the stakes right now. If this is a poker game, I'm shoving my chips to the middle of the table. I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out. Okay? This team is going to the playoffs.
Oh, baby, what a show we got for you. That was former Giants head coach Jim Fossil, and he's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to Long Island's number one sports talk radio show. It's Sports Talk 1240. Jake Brown at JB Sports Radio, and my special co-host for the night. You know who the czar is of basketball. He is the czar of the playbook. It's Emory Hunt at F-Ball Game Plan on Twitter. You can check out his site at footballgameplan.com. He is the CEO and analyst there. And, of course, you can get his book on footballgameplan.com called Stiff Arming Football Myths. And also, a former Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajun running back, Emory. Glad to welcome you on tonight. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Of course, we got a lot to talk about. NFL Week 11. We got Jim Fossil joining us in a couple of minutes, the former Giant head coach who took the team to the Super Bowl in 2000 and hasn't got a chance in the last couple of years. He last was with the Las Vegas Locomotives of the UFL. Me and Emory got to cover a couple of FXFL games, and we know we want to ask him about a development league for the league, which I think they do need, and we'll talk about that with him, of course. We got Luke Halbert at I'm Luke Halbert controlling the social media at Sports Talk 1240. Use the hashtag AskJimFossil, and any of your questions we will read if they are good, and if they stink, we won't read them. Of course, the Giants start today with a season-ending loss to the San Francisco 49ers, kind of like when Jim coached in 2002 when they suffered that loss to the Niners where they blew a 38-14 lead, and Emory said, do you sure you want to talk about that with Jim? And I do, because that's one lasting memory you have. You have that ball thrown down the field, the ineligible receiver called, and the Giants lose at the buzzer 39-38. But let's get a couple minutes before we get him on. Let's talk about this Giants game. Eli Manning, 5 interceptions. He was an absolute train wreck out there. The offense just is a disaster. Terrible play calling by Ben McAdoo in the red zone there. Who do you point the finger at most in this game, Emory?
Well, look, it's a team effort, number one. And number two, you look at the ineffectiveness of the running game. You have to have the balance there. You don't have to have the numbers per se, but the attempts have to be there. I think they only ran the ball 20 times. Eli threw it 45 times. It's almost like a pitcher. If he's struggling, stop throwing pitches. So you want to limit his effectiveness by also increasing the ability to run the football. I think they should have ran the ball a little bit more.
I agree with you. The problem is they got down early. But here's the thing. I think they wanted to limit the carries of Rashad Jennings coming back from that sprained MCL, but you're right. Ground and pound the ball, and they had a little bit of success when they did. He was averaging 3 to 4 yards, not a ton, but when your quarterback is struggling that mightily, you got to mix in the run there. And give credit to the Niners defense. They did a tremendous job. But let's be honest, a couple of those throws from Eli Manning, I mean, some of the worst throws I have ever seen. There was one, it was in the second quarter. He threw it right to the linebacker, and we were watching, we're like, did that really just happen? And it seemed like a couple of them were like that, and there weren't really ones where you blame the receiver, because, you know, the Giants have some talented receivers, and one of those guys, Emory, is Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, you look at the fact that those plays will happen. I tend to look at the fact that an offensive line was allowing pressure, allowing penetration. They really didn't protect Eli as much. And once the 49ers smelled blood, they started to blitz often, and it got him into trouble.
And that 49er defense is looking good again. I mean, they had their questions, of course. They've been struggling, but they needed this win today. They got it, and that NFC West race is starting to get very interesting with the Cardinals atop the race, and you got the Seahawks a couple of games back now, and the Cardinals did win today, so they are now 9-1, which is absolutely crazy with Drew Stan. But we'll get into NFL Week 11 a little bit later. Of course, Knicks, Nets, Mets, and a little bit of Jets as well. But Odell Beckham is a guy I want to look at here because he's something you take out of this game, you take out of this season, and you look towards the future as a key piece to the puzzle, because some of these catches he makes are just incredible. And here's something I was bothered by. They didn't throw the ball down the field to him as much as they should have. Would you agree with that? Because you saw when they did try, he was beating the cornerbacks left and right. He was beating his defenders.
It goes hand in hand. You have to have that protection to throw downfield. That's true. Once they did protect up front, he was able to go deep down the field. Just imagine this receiving corps when they get Victor Cruz back, and now you have Beckham along with Randall, along with a tight end now. That just opens up that entire offense.
That's going to be a scary offense next year. A team that did have a scary offense was the New York Giants back in 2000 when they made the Super Bowl. And the guy who coached them to get them there was Mr. Jim Fossil. And now Jim joins us on Sports Talk 1240. Jim, Jake Brown, Emery Hunt here. Thanks a lot for joining us. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. Sunday's the greatest day of the week. You know, you watch all the games.
Oh, yeah, of course. And now, were you watching your son? Are you in St. Louis right now? Did you watch him today?
No. I'm going to watch him next week in Chargers. I was at the 49er game, the Arizona game, and then next week at San Diego. I'm mainly hitting the games on the West Coast.
Yeah, and your son, I mean, John Fossil, the special teams coordinator of the Rams, did you or anyone else in the world, let's be honest, did you ever see that coming against a Broncos team that's kind of looked unstoppable this season?
No, you know, it's an improving team. I mean, they're very young, and they can put pressure on the quarterback. That's the main thing. But I thought they won on every phase. Their defense put pressure. Early in the game when the Broncos always throw those short crossing routes, they defended those. And then, you know, they got pressure on the quarterback. They ran the ball well, and special teams was good. And so, you know, that's what happens. Rams are the surprise team. Don't ever bet against them because they jump up. They've beaten Seattle. They've beaten 49ers. They've beaten the Denver Broncos. They beat all the good teams. They just got to beat the other teams that are expected to win.
Yeah, and how is it as a father getting to watch your son coach? Is it kind of like a cool, surreal experience for you?
Yeah, it really is because he's always wanted to coach, and he worked his way up. I mean, I didn't pull him along. I didn't use my ability to talk to coaches. He's well respected, and he's earned it, and he's done a good job, and he's made a name for himself. He's not my son; he's his own self. As a coach in special teams.
And coach, you came up through the ranks as far as coaching is concerned, and now you said your son did the same thing. And I just wanted to ask a question. You've coached in other leagues. You coached in the UFL, and you've seen the need for development of players. How important is that, again, and also for the development of coaches? Do you think another league is needed?
Oh, absolutely. Bill Walsh told me 20 years ago, you know, and at the end of the day, he's right. I mean, the NFL cuts close to 900 players off the rosters that they took to training camp, which means they thought they had a chance to play. Well, if you cut that many guys, I mean, you can form a great league of good players. You just have to run it right. And I also know for a fact the NFL wants a developmental league. They can train officials. They can look at players develop because a lot of times through all my 20 years with the NFL, there's a lot of guys that come in the league and they're intimidated. But they have the ability. They're just intimidated. They're not themselves. And once they realize I can play in this league, through a developmental league, they become really good players.
Do you think it's a big misconception that people say, okay, well, this guy didn't make it into the NFL, he can go to Canada or he can go into the Arena League? That's not really developing the guy for this NFL game, is it?
No, it isn't. And I think that, you know, coaches, scouts, everybody has a prejudice against, well, he didn't make it with this team, but, you know, he played good in the Arena League or the UFL or this or that. And they've already formed an opinion. I still have guys. I mean, Steve Hauschka has been the kicker for Seattle. Graham Gunnow has been a kicker in the league. I've got other players that are playing in the league right now that came in, they developed, they gained their confidence, and they became good players.
Former Giants head coach Jim Fossil joins us here on Sports Talk 1240 with Jake Brown and Emery Hunt. Jim, what's the reason, do you think, that you are not getting that chance now? Now, say the Bears or the Giants, if they get rid of their coach, they called you. Do you want to be back in the league if they gave you a chance right now?
You'd have to take the right situation. The game's changed so much since I got in it. You know, it's totally different. You know, and people ask me that all the time. Well, you know, I interviewed at Jobs twice with the Rams, and twice their coaches last about 2 years or 3 years. And then I interviewed at Jobs where somebody, the general manager, hired a friend. Mm-hmm. And then I was going to go to the Washington Redskins twice. But, you know, one time they got Joe Gibbs to come back, which is understandable, things like that. But, you know, I mean, the NFL is more about connections. I know the guy. I've worked with the guy. So I can't fault it because George Young, who I'm prejudiced, but I think he's the best general manager in the history of the game, hired me, but he knew me. He saw my body of work, but he wasn't going to hire me after John Elway when I was there at his best year in the Oakland. We did good and all that, but he knew me, so he was comfortable, and that's the way it is. When I was in the league, most of the time coaching, most of the general managers, they were low-level scouts. I don't know them. I had no association with them. So it's just a normal process in the NFL as it is in any business.
Now, you mentioned Joe Gibbs replacing you. Let's be real, Jim. Did you really think Zorn deserved the job over you? Because I think your resume was a little bit better than Jim Zorn's. Did you think you at that point you may have got robbed a little bit?
Totally. You know, the general manager who got fired by Dan Snyder, he talked me into Zorn as a coordinator. I put the staff together. I mean, I was putting the staff together over the phone. Joe Bugle's going to stay. Danny Smith's going to stay. We'll keep him. We'll do this. I was doing it over the phone. And then he did his behind-the-scenes work and convinced Dan Snyder, who, I will say this, I could work for Dan Snyder. I like Dan Snyder. I mean, I think he's a passionate owner, and I could work for him. Now, a lot of people think, well, you're crazy. I don't believe that. I think I'm a fair judgment of a guy. And he convinced him that, well, Jim Zorn is going to get a head job in a year. Well, why don't we talk to him? Well, then everything fell in place. He pushed Jim Zorn. Jim Zorn was no more ready for that job than the man in the moon.
And, Coach, I wanted to ask you a question. You see this a lot, and I have a hard time understanding this, where you have a guy that's coaching a football team. Just like in college football, you get to go out there and recruit. As far as an NFL coach, would you want a hand in personnel decisions as far as the draft is concerned? Because as a coach, you know what a guy can do for your team and what he can do for you. And to have someone put a guy on your team that may not fit with what you want to do, how tough is that?
Well, I think, in my opinion, I don't agree with, if you want me to serve the dinner, let me shop for the groceries. Because nobody is right all the time. No coach, no general manager, no player personnel, nobody. We all make mistakes. So what you have to have is a cooperative effort and talk it through. At the end of the day, the coaches, the head coach primarily, but the coaches, they have to tell the scouts what type of player they're looking for and then let the scouts go find that guy, okay? The scouts should not tell the coach, well, we like this tight end because he's big, physical. Well, no, we need a pass-receiving tight end. So go find me one of those guys, and then I'll trust you. You tell me who the best guy that's a pass-receiving tight end that can block, and I'll take him. But don't you guys tell me what fits our personnel. I'll tell you what we need personnel-wise, and then you go find that person.
Jim Fossil joins us here on Sports Talk 1240. Jake Brown, Emery Hunt on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Do you look at, Jim, kind of the NFL transitioning to a younger coaching generation? We're seeing the older guys now kind of lose their mojo. We're seeing like a Harbaugh and all these young coaches kind of taking over. Do you see the NFL kind of transitioning to a younger coaching league at this point?
Well, I think that's a mistake because I haven't researched it for a while. But if you went back and you said guys on their second job that they've had a lot of success, more success. I mean, Bill Belichick got fired, okay? Now he's the guru of coaching. Mm-hmm. And you know, the point being is, you know, what bothers me is that if a team has a good year, okay, and I'm not going to name names, okay, but if a coordinator is coaching a Hall of Fame quarterback and they have a good year, well, then people say, well, we got to go get him. well, wait a minute, was it him or was that Hall of Fame quarterback? You know, right. And so, you know, you got Tom Brady, you got Peyton Manning, you know, Drew Brees, all these guys, and they're going, well, wait a minute. Well, when I had John Elway in Denver and he had his best year, George Young told me, he said, I didn't know if it was you or him. I really didn't know if it was you or him. But then when you went to Oakland and Hofstetler had his best year and the offense was good, and then you went to Arizona and you rekindled Boomer Esiason's career, who I love Boomer, then I could document it was you. But what happens is a lot of guys that get hired as an assistant, they just had a great year with a great team as a coordinator. Oh, then he's got to be ready. Well, there's more to it. You got to give the credit for doing it, but you can't say, well, he's the next guy. Because being a coordinator and being a head coach is a huge leap.
So in terms of Todd, if you're talking about coordinator now, Todd Bowles is doing a tremendous job with the Arizona Cardinals. Again, they win today 14-6. Is he a guy you think that could kind of go from coordinator to head coach this offseason?
If I were an owner or a general manager in the position to hire somebody, I would absolutely 100% talk to him. And then I would want to ask him the tough questions. And I would want to see who he's going to have as a staff. Because the first thing is, as a head coach, who are you hiring? Who are your assistants? Okay? Mm-hmm. I like it or I don't like it. All right? What's your philosophy? How do you think this organization ought to operate? And you need to pin him down, and then you do your research. Is he ready to be a head coach? And then, you know, go from there. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job, and today was awesome what he did. But now you got to understand. Plus, the guy has got to be the face of the franchise. And the face of the franchise means he can handle the media, he can handle all the questions, and he can handle the team. If he's a defensive coach like Todd Bowles, okay, well, how does he relate to the offensive guys? How is he going to control the special teams, too? He's no longer just running one side of the ball. He's running three sides of the ball and working with the personnel department. And through questioning and finding out about him and his philosophy, well, then you make a choice.
And that's a great point right there, Coach. When you look at a guy like yourself, offensive guy, tremendous running game, passing game was on point, how hard is it to give away responsibilities? Because now you see some guys, let's say like a Mike McCarthy or a guy that coached under you and Sean Payton that wants to, he's the head coach as well as the offensive coordinator. How tough is it to give up that responsibility and allow the coach to coach?
Well, I think it's tough. I ran it for the building process that we went through. And I think, I'm prejudiced about it, I think offensive guys have a little bit more of the feel of the whole team than defensive guys do. It doesn't mean that the defensive guy can't do it. I don't mean that at all. But on offense, it's like clock management. Okay, I've said this before. Coordinators, offensive coordinators, come up through the ranks learning how to manage the clock, because you're the one that's going to throw, you're going to call timeouts, you're going to get guys out of bounds, you're going to manage the clock in crucial situations. First half into the game. Defensive coaches don't do that. They don't do it. They're just out there. And that's where the mistakes are made. So if you're going to hire a defensive head coach, my point of emphasis to him was you really have to study and know and be in coordination with your offensive guy how you manage the clock, because they don't do it through their whole career. Defensive coordinators don't manage the clock. Offensive coordinators have to be able to manage the clock.
And, Coach, do you think it's tough for a young quarterback, let's say a rookie quarterback or a first-year guy, to develop under a defensive-minded head coach?
Say it again, a defensive coach what now?
Do you think it's tough for a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, to develop underneath a defensive-minded head coach?
Cough, cough, Rex Ryan and the New York Jets.
Well, yeah, if you're a defensive background coordinator, you better have a well-trained with a background in coaching quarterbacks and then let him do it. I mean, it's such a position where there's so many little things that, you know, he doesn't understand at all. So you better It's like me. I'm an offensive guy. My number one hire is a defensive coordinator. If you're a defensive head coach, you better hire a real sharp coordinator and let him develop that guy. You know, and the one thing is that Bill Walsh said a lot of years ago, and I think people misinterpreted it. You need a guy that's trained in, if you want to develop a quarterback, that the guy is technologically, he can help this guy fundamentally develop, whether it's how he carries the ball, how he throws the ball, his footwork, his movement. And he says, you need a guy like that. Well, then everybody went to saying, well, I need to hire that guy, and then I'm going to have a coordinator. Okay, or the coordinator is going to coach. You know, too many guys were coaching the quarterback that had no background in quarterbacks, but they were going to be the offensive coordinator. How do you develop the guy's fundamentals? And people misinterpreted that. They said everybody has to have just a quarterback coach. You don't have to if your coordinator can coach the quarterback.
Jim Fossil joining us, and this is awesome because when I first became a football fan, I was a Giants fan, and you were the head coach there when the Giants had success. I want to get into the Giants, but when we're talking about defensive coordinators, obviously Emery's question is basically referring to Rex Ryan of the Jets. What is your take on the situation with Gangrene? Does Rex need to go? Do they need obviously they need a new quarterback, but what's your take on what's going on in the debacle that's been the New York Jets?
Well, it's hard because I like Rex. Rex seems like a different guy than what I knew. And guys change as a head coach. You know, and I think he got fined the third time for profanity or gestures to fans and stuff like that. That doesn't play well with the fans or the players. It does not. And, you know, as a head coach, the players are looking, are you under control? Or are you out there in space doing crazy stuff? And I think that hurts him. I think Rex is a great football mind. Who made the choices for the offensive personnel, or who's going to play quarterback, or you know, gone through at least three offensive coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the side of the ball that he needs to make sure works. That's where you got to spend time. Hiring the right coaches, getting the right quarterback, those type of things, because he can handle the defense. And right now, you know, the fly in the ointment's been offense pretty much since he's been there. But I just think the things that are hurting him right now are the comments and saying things, and mm-hmm. he got fined, what, $100,000 by the NFL for
yep.
vulgar language? I don't think, I mean, it plays like, it's great if you're winning, because you're out there, but if you're not winning, it's a detriment to the team, and the players are going, this is our leader. But I like Rex. I think he's a hell of a football mind on defense. In fact, when I was going to go to the Redskins, I was going to try to get him to come with me as a defensive coordinator.
So, but do you give Rex the pink slip based on the team's performance, right? He's gone?
Well, that's what they're all judged on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and... You know, the judgment on head coaches is, are you taking us in the right direction or the wrong direction? And everybody can have an up or a down year. Everybody can. You can't, every time the coach has a bad year, you can't fire him. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there'll be no coaches out there. Don't want anybody to hire.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you have to make a judgment. And I think that, you know, as an owner, Woody is going to have to decide how many good decisions or how many bad decisions? I mean, Geno Smith, who drafted him? Who wanted him? Who brought him in? Because I think the guy is still questionable. Is he a guy? Is he an NFL quarterback? And their quarterback has been the problem
mm-hmm.
on offense. I think Jeff Sanchez can be a winning quarterback if you give him the right system and the right players around him and opportunities to win. Then I think he can. But he just hasn't worked on that side of the ball. And the owner has to say, how much accountability does he hold that this offense isn't working? I know he's a good defensive coordinator. I know that. But I need a head coach that's going to make the offense, the defense, and the special teams better.
And, Jim, put yourself in Rex's shoes. Your GM is $20 million under the salary cap. You have cornerbacks coming off the street. I mean, they could have open tryouts right now and pick up a bum on 34th Street to play cornerback. What's going through your mind as a head coach? Aren't you kind of want to kind of say something bad about the GM at that point? Obviously, you can't. But doesn't a lot of this fault have to go on John Idzik for having so much money available and not bringing in talent to give a defensive-minded head coach no defense?
Well, you know, I would hope to think that they're in concert with their decisions. I would hope that.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not, and I own the team, and I'm saying my general manager and my head coach don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. They're arguing about everything. Well, then one of them's got to go. Okay? One of them has to go. If they're in concert and they're making these decisions and they're falling apart, well, then both of them ought to go. If you feel like, well, we're making the right decisions, we're close, we're making progress, well, then let's stick with it. So there's kind of three arrows there. And that's what I would do as an owner. Do I have confidence that these two guys can work together, and we've hit a rough road in the area of the season? Well, then, all right, I'm going to stick with them. Now, the only thing over is that if we've been stuck on this thing for 2, 3, 4 years, well, we're not making any progress. Well, these guys get along with, then I need to make a change with both. If they don't get along, then you got to pick one of the two and say, you know. If I owned a team, I would tell you this. I'd hire a general manager and a head coach, and I'd say, you guys work because not one of you are going to get fired. You're both going to get fired at the same time. Or I'm going to extend both of your contracts. One of the two. So you better get along.
Now, Coach, how hard is it to sit through a game and not want to get out there and coach? Does that coaching bug bite you each and every day?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It does. But you know what? I've said this to people that always talk to me, and I always get calls, maybe to go back, you know. And I'm passionate about coaching; I love it, but I'm not going to get in a bad situation. I'm not. I got into one of them, and I'll never do it again. It's a headache. Coaching is a passion and a love, but if you look at it, it's all screwed up, and you're not having fun. You're going to get out of that job faster than anything, and you're going to do it. And that's kind of what happened to me at Baltimore. What I agreed with and how we're going to operate didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
what went wrong there? Why didn't the offense thrive in Baltimore? What happened?
Why didn't it thrive?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't thrive for 9 years. Okay. I mean, it didn't. No quarterback got developed. I think they probably went through 9 quarterbacks. And I'm not going to go any further with that, but it wasn't what I was told was going to happen. And, you know, in Brian's tenure, I think there was 3 coordinators and 2 offensive line coaches, 3 offensive or wide receiver coaches, 3 running back coaches. It just didn't work, okay, in any manner. But they played great defense. They played great defense.
Jim Fossil joining us, and just I really appreciate you giving us some time here. I'm really enjoying this. Take us back, because one of the moments that you probably can't get out of your head, that Giants fans can't get out of your head, is that 2002 wild card game versus the 49ers. What's going through your mind when the receiver's down the field, they call him ineligible, and he really was eligible? I mean, what are you thinking at that point?
Well, when they threw the flag, I thought, good, they got the call right. And then when they announced it over the loudspeaker, the illegal man downfield, I go, what? And I, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was going to go out there, and the officials exited the field. And, you know, the sad part is the guy that blew the call, he's a referee in the league. And, you know, when you make a mistake in the playoffs, we would have gone on, and we were a hot team at the time. And it just, stuff happens like that. And as a coach, you just got to live with it. And, you know, but it affects a lot of people's careers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, I've been involved in 2 of them where unbelievable bad call that set things back. And I will say this. Last year I went to the 49er Ram game out at the 49ers. And as I'm walking in, I got my passes, I go down the field. The owner of the 49ers came up to me and he says, "Coach, I still want to apologize to you. We stole that game from you. You should have had another opportunity."
He gave you a steak dinner after that?
Yeah, no, he didn't. But, I mean, you kind of realize that. And I was also the offensive coordinator at Stanford in the Stanford-Cal game when they ran through the band.
Yikes.
Oh, wow, that's right.
and they blew the calls in. They totally blew it. Now, did we have some problem with it? Yeah, you always do it. I mean, the 49er game, we dropped a touchdown pass with 4 or 5 minutes to go, which would have iced it. All right, that's on us. But when you get down to it, when the officials blow a call, and not a judgment call, like the 49er game, that was just, it was ridiculous that they made it. They made that decision. I mean, they didn't straighten it out. Mm-hmm. But it cost people their careers. The Stanford, the next year, it was just so devastating, the head coach got fired. Mm-hmm. You know, and I went one more year, and then I'm gone. And there's a smell that stays there, and it takes out a lot of stuff out of you. So, but as a coach, you understand, it's not a perfect deal. It's not a perfect deal, and there's never a coach that's ever coached that doesn't have a bad season. You know what's interesting is, do you know how many years Tom Landry was the head coach at Dallas Cowboys before his record was 500?
How many?
That's as many wins as you got many losses, right?
Yeah.
Take a guess.
Six?
Ten,
yeah.
Wow.
Now,
all right.
I'll put any money you want on it. Who in the NFL today could last 10 years when they finally reach 500? Nobody.
I mean, Lovie Smith went 10-6 and got fired.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And it's just all about you better do it now. You better get it done now. I mean, that was in an era where you didn't have free agency. In today's game, they didn't have salary cap. They didn't have free agency. So you pretty much had your team. You didn't lose guys. Okay? You got to draft smart and build. In today's game, I tell you what, the coach can only do so much, but then the capologist and the general manager and the personnel guy and all the evaluations from the coaches and the scouts, you could be up and down. You could be up and down. And so, I mean, it makes it harder on the coaches. Coaches get fired after 2 or 3 years if they don't come out smoking.
Do you guys win the Super Bowl if that call is not made? Were you guys Super Bowl champs?
Which call are you talking about?
The 49er game. They don't call that. You kick the game-winning field goal, chippy. Are you guys the Super Bowl champions of 2002?
Very good possibility. I mean, we were the hottest team going. Mm-hmm. We were the highest-scoring team in the league. That's the year I had to take it back, and it wasn't any genius by my part. We just started playing. We would have played Tampa, and I think we could have beaten Tampa, and then we would have met the Raiders in the Super Bowl. But it's hard to say. You never know. I mean, that's why they play the game and everybody watches. You really don't know. How about the Rams today against Denver?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, come on. So nobody really knows what can happen. But I felt very good. We were healthy, and we were playing good football.
All right, a couple more before a little rapid fire, and then we'll let you go, Jim. 2000, just tell us what happened. I mean, was it the fact that you played one of the great defenses of all time? Were you guys not prepared? What happened with, I mean, Kerry Collins had 4 picks. What happened in that Super Bowl where you guys got beat down, really?
Well, our offense had a hard day. They really had a hard day. And that is probably, I wouldn't hesitate to say that was the best defense I've ever coached against. I mean, they were hard to run against. They were so big and physical. And when you don't have a run game, it's hard to protect. We really struggled with that defensive line. And they were, all those guys were in their prime. Ray Lewis was in his prime. All of them were in their prime. And I did talk to John Gruden, who was at Oakland at the time, and beat him. And he said, "Jim, when you look at the tape, they are so physical, but don't believe the tape as far as their speed and quickness. They are far faster, far quicker than they look on tape. Our guys couldn't handle them."
All right.
And you know what, that year with Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
They had, I think it was five games that they didn't score a touchdown. And they still won.
Right.
And Trent Dilfer is probably one of the – do you call Trent Dilfer a top three worst quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl? Because I think so.
I'd have to look at all of them. But, you know, I know it, Jim.
It's all right.
Yeah, all I know is this. When they made that call against us, which was a bad call, the NFL said it,
mm-hmm.
to call that interception by Jesse Armstead back, Brian Billick would have crucified him when he got to the sideline. And I don't think Trent could have taken a snap or given the signals because he would have had the head coach down his throat so far that I don't think he would have functioned.
All right, Jim, before we let you go, a little rapid fire. Just first thing that comes to your mind, just a little quick tidbits when we ask it, who was the best player you ever coached?
John Elway.
Is Tiki Barber a Hall of Famer?
You know, with his numbers and stuff, I would have to put it down. I mean, in my mind, he is. I know he ran into a lot of issues afterwards. He had terrible timing when he announced about he didn't like Coughlin and all that, and then they went on to win a Super Bowl. As far as my mind, I'd coach Tiki Barber every day in my life.
Favorite coach that you coached with?
Favorite coach that I coached with?
Is it John Fox? I mean, he's had a lot of success.
Yeah, he has. I'm kind of thinking more of the guys that I work for. Mm. I loved work. You know, I was 2 years with Wade Phillips as a coordinator. Vince Tobin, I liked him. Oh, boy, that's a hard one. Just because I have respect for a lot of these guys. I don't have any hate in my heart for them.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed, you know, most of my career, I worked for a defensive head coach. And bottom line, we were successful on offense, and they let me do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was really fun to do that. Paul Wiggin, I worked for at Stanford. I mean, the guy's a great guy. I'd go to war every day for him. So, you know, and Bill Walsh was a big influence on me. You know, being at Stanford and right near the 49ers and stuff. So, that's really a hard one to say.
Yeah, I mean, you, Peyton, and Fox is probably one of the great coaching staffs of all time. Would you agree with that? I mean, that's a three musketeers. That's a nice little trio right there.
Well, I will say this. When I hired John Fox, he had one offer to be a DB coach. Okay? He wasn't going to be a coordinator anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And George Young questioned me about it. Jim, you know, he got fired at Raiders. He got this, but that. I said, George, I like the guy. Okay? Sean Payton was going to go back to college. He could not get a job in the NFL. He was done. He couldn't get an interview in the NFL when I hired him. So he was going back to college. And I really liked Sean because I thought he was a good guy and I could train him to be a coordinator and a play caller and all that stuff. Because he hadn't done it. You know, he'd only had 1 year in the NFL as a quality control guy. So he was really green behind the ears. But I liked his attitude. I interviewed 10 coaches for the quarterback job. Mm-hmm. And I was running the offense. And I wanted a guy that I thought, you know, this guy sticks with me 2, 3, 4 years. He would have the potential to be a coordinator. And then I made him the coordinator after my mom died and I was worn out and turned the play calling over to him. I was just worn out. It was time probably to pass the baton. And he did a good job.
Mm-hmm. Jim Fossil. I mean, I wish we had a two-hour show, Jim, because I could talk to you for days. But unfortunately, we got to pay the bills, and we got to get into a little bit of NFL. But Jim Fossil, former Giants head coach, thanks so much for joining us, Jim, and have a great night. And we will talk soon. Thank you.
Anytime. You guys got great questions.
Thanks, Jim. Take it easy.
Okay.
Jim Fossil, man, I could have talked for 3 hours, 4 hours.
I'm ready to go play. I'm still ready to go play. He got me fired up.
Yeah, we're fired up, and we'll fire all you up. I think we still got a little engine left in the tank. NFL Week 11, we'll talk Giants, we'll talk Jets, a little Knicks and Mets, too, if we could get to it. I mean, there's not much time to do so. But you're going to hear all that and more. 631-888-8811. We will take your calls after the break as well. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 with Jake Brown and Emery Hunt. We'll be right back.
And AM 1240 WPBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip Chain. Use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York. Breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Talk 1240. Jake Brown, Emery Hunt at F-Ball Game Plan at JB Sports Radio. Follow us at Sports Talk 1240. And if you did miss that interview with Jim Fossil, it will be online tomorrow. SportsTalk1240.com, JakeRyanBrown.com. We'll tweet it. We'll post it. It'll be on iTunes. You can download it there. If you can't find it, you ain't looking, and you're not very savvy on the internet, because you'd have to be an idiot if you can't find it. So listen to that, because just tremendous stuff. And I loved, we were just talking about during the break, that he said that he got robbed when Jim Zorn got hired over him, because he just tells it how it is, and that was really tremendous.
Hey, you find that a coach that is upfront and honest like that is probably upfront and honest with his players, which is why you'll probably find players that'll say great things about Fossil, because he'll tell it like it is.
The thing is, I didn't ask him if you would fire Tom Coughlin, because I want to see what his reaction would be. That's a tough question.
The media fires him each and every week. And once the Giants is what? We're in November now. And they're already talking about firing him. So this is right on point to where the Giants just make a run, finish with a winning record, and probably go deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Jim just – he'll let it all loose. And it is later at night, so we did say maybe he had a couple of drinks in him. Who knows? But he sounded sober. He sounded good.
Come on, man.
All right, Sports Talk 1240, Jake Brown, Emery Hunt, F-Ball Game Plan. He is the czar of the playbook, and you can check out his videos, of course, on YouTube as well. Does a great job breaking down the X's and O's, and we're going to break down the X's and O's of. But first, before we do you fire Coughlin? I think he's gone. I think he's had a great time with it. It's so tough because you love the guy. He's a veteran. He's great, but at some point you got to base it on wins and losses. And this Giants team is 3-7. If they finish 6-10 or worse, I think he's got to go. Maybe 7-9, 8-8, you keep him just because of the injuries. But I say he goes, stays or goes.
He stays. If you just made a point to keep him, if they go 7-9 or 8-8, well, what's the difference at 6-10? You know,
I mean,
you got to keep the guy. I think a lot of it has to do with guys not staying healthy. They have to stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, once Jennings went down, their season kind of went down, and my fantasy football season went down. I have not won once since Rashad Jennings got hurt, so that killed my team. But let's go around the league. Let's have a little fun right now. The Chiefs beat the Seahawks 24-20. I like the Chiefs in that game. They were at home. The Seahawks have been so inconsistent. They're just not the same team that they were. And you look now, on November 16th, the Seattle Seahawks are three games behind the Arizona Cardinals for first place. No one could have predicted this.
Well, here's the thing. It was interesting to watch that game because they played the same game offensively. Both offenses spread the field, ran downhill. Both quarterbacks extended plays with their legs, and it really came down to the last play. Richardson should have caught that pass at the end.
Yeah, and the Seahawks had plenty of chances and didn't find a way to win. And they're in trouble because this NFC wildcard race is going to be actually extremely wild. 10-6 is probably not getting a couple of teams in. So even if the Giants did win out, if they hadn't lost today, they would have got in. We didn't break down that Giant game much because we talked with Jim a lot. But five picks and still in the game and you still lose is just embarrassing. So the Giants don't deserve to be in the playoffs. They didn't deserve to win. Falcons beat the Panthers 19-17, and Luke is a Falcons fan, and the Atlanta Falcons at 4-6 now are tied for first place in the NFC South. Can we just ban teams from the NFC South making the playoffs?
I joked earlier that it may take a 4-12 team to win the division to get into the playoffs, but it's going to be a bad division. 8-8 is probably going to get that division and a home game, which is tough because you're going to get a team with a double-digit win to come play
like
at
Arizona.
Atlanta. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. So,
and it's weird because remember the Seahawks at 7-9 a couple of years ago made it. They played RG3 in the first round.
They played New Orleans.
Did they?
They knocked out the Saints.
No, they won.
They won that game.
Yeah, that's right.
Lynch,
that's right.
Crazy run.
Okay, that was 2012 or 2011.
2011.
Was that Russell Wilson's first year?
Nope. Not Hasselbeck.
Hasselbeck.
I just sound
you're
like
all out
right
of
now.
It right now.
I might need
what's
to
in that
it.
Cup?
It is a nice little Chipotle soda. Now Bengals beat the Saints 27-10. A lot of people surprised by this because you say you go into the Superdome, you can't win there. You know what? The Saints, you got to be concerned with this football team right now. Rob Ryan and his pirate act. I mean, he's starring in the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I've talked with the directors. He will star in that. They get trounced today. Defense, terrible performance. You're giving up points to Andy Dalton, who had one of the worst performances in NFL history last week. Can the Saints still make the playoffs?
They can. It's just it's the little things they have to clean up. Today they couldn't get off the field on third down. And offensively, the balance has to be there. You can't keep trying to force or live vicariously through Drew Brees. And it's tough because if I was a head coach, I would always want to give the ball to the running back. But I understand his reason for allowing Brees to throw, but you have to find that balance.
And they had zero balance today, as you said, and their offense has got to concern you. Drew Brees is having one of the worst years of his career. The Bucks beat the Redskins. I'm not even going to talk about that game. RG3 was awful. The Bucks trounced them 27-7. Both those teams aren't making the playoffs. On to the next. The Rams beat the Broncos. We talked about it before. I'm losing my voice here. 22-7. The Rams win that one. Absolutely shocking. Peyton Manning was awful. You know what? This Rams team surprises really good teams. They've done it multiple times this year. And you give Jeff Fisher and that coaching staff some credit for what they've done with a pretty mediocre team and really a below-average quarterback.
Well, you look at their defense. Their front seven is athletic, and they give you problems no matter who you are. If you try to run, they're fast enough to get into the gaps and make a play. If you try to throw, their linebackers can cover, and they're not afraid to go outside and play man. They will press you on the outside, and all of that frustrated Peyton Manning. So that defense was the big reason why they knocked off the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, their defense has probably overperformed with those injuries that they've battled. So you got to give the Rams credit. Not a playoff team. In the NFC South, they'd be a playoff team right now. But in the end, the Broncos are still 7-3. But now tied for first, that AFC West just got a whole lot more interesting. You look at the Chiefs early in the year and what happened with them. They struggled early on, and they've got their mojo back. And then speaking of the AFC West, you know what? Excuse me. The Chargers do win today, 13-6. But, Emery, can you break down, as the czar of the playbook, what's gone on with the San Diego Chargers? Because since that the game versus the Raiders where they nearly lost, they only won by a field goal late in that game, they've just been terrible. What's going on?
The injuries started to add up, and as you get later on in the season, you start to expose your depth. And that's the biggest problem right now with the Chargers. When Woodhead was healthy, when the other back was healthy, I forget his name. But
Ryan Matthews.
Well, earlier in the season, he missed some time. So offensively, getting those guys back healthy, defensively they had some injuries as well. So if they're going to get guys back, they're going to pick up right where they left off. But they had a rough patch, and I think those injuries are what killed them in that middle part of the season.
The Bears beat the Vikings 21-13, and you know what? Jake Brown sits Jay Cutler, America's favorite diabetic, and he, you know what? He goes out there and wins, and he's 4-6. Give him a lot of credit, and I don't know where that came from, but it works. The Bears surprise a lot of people. We don't need to break down that game because both those teams aren't making the playoffs. I want to talk about relevant games. The Texans beat the Browns 23-7. The Hoyer factor. Hoyer went down, and I was throwing a parade because we almost had Manziel mania happen, and then he came back. He got up and came back on there. He didn't want to step out because one play with Manziel, say he throws a touchdown pass, and the world goes crazy. Twitter blows up, and it's a second coming. And what's your take? Because every time, Emery, I want to say the Browns are a playoff team, they go out and do what they did today and have just an absolute dud performance. What's your take on this Cleveland Browns team? Are they a playoff team?
Defensively, they're there. They just have to be able to stop the run a little bit better. Offensively, I would have went with Manziel earlier in the season because this is the best Hoyer is going to play. And if this is his best, then you go with the young guy that has upside and also can run. So I don't see where Hoyer is keeping them where they are now. He's solid, but he's not going to grow. He's maxed out already, and I think that's holding this team back offensively because you know a rookie will continue to grow.
So here's the thing, because they're in a weird contract situation. Here's the thing. I've heard people say you franchise tag him, but that's going to cost you $18 million. Then you hear people say give him an extension, but he wants big money now. And I'm glad that they didn't give him an extension early because he puts performances like this, and he puts up performances like he did versus the Jaguars, where the Jaguars ran all over their ass, and they just crushed him. So what do you do in terms of his contract? Do you bring him back? I know it sounds like you want Manziel to start right now.
You drafted him in the first round.
If I'm
an owner or a GM, and I take a guy in the first round and give him that amount of money, you're playing. Mm-hmm. You don't get better by sitting on the bench. I'm sorry. You know, you get out there and you play. And Hoyer is a guy that you've seen year over year. Those guys will flash, but they can't sustain that success.
Let's be real. He was a backup for a reason. And people like to say, oh, they're 6-3. Look at his statistics. More incompletions than completions in some games. He'll turn the ball over. They've been one of the top running teams in the NFL. They run it almost more than anyone. I mean, you can look up his stats. The incompletion total is a little bit scary. And Luke's trying to show me something. Oh.
30 incompletions today.
30 incompletions.
20 of 50.
I mean, I think Eli Manning had a better performance.
At least somebody catching the ball with Eli Manning. At least he throws some to the defense. But 30 incompletions.
You do give him a little bit of slack because the receiving core is pretty bad with Andrew Hawkins and the guys that they have. They don't really have any capable receivers. And Jordan Cameron's been hurt all year. But Josh Gordon's coming back.
But you're paid to do a job.
Exactly.
You know, catch the football. That's all you have to do.
Let's not give him any excuses for his poor play. The Browns now falling behind in the standings. And we go to the 4 o'clock games now. We talked about the Chargers. They won today 13-6. Not too convincing. They try to keep their playoff hopes alive. Really one of the games of the week. The Cardinals, me and Luke talked about it before. The Cardinals needed that impressive road win under Drew Stanton. And you know who did it for them today? It was their defense under Todd Bowles, who you heard Jim Fossil talk about it, Emery. You heard him say, Bowles deserves a shot. I want to talk with this guy, see what he has to say, because everyone's talking about Bowles becoming the next big head coach as a defensive coordinator. And boy, do they look good with Patrick Peterson and Antonio Cromartie, that pass rush. You break down the X's and O's right now for me with that defense.
Look at their secondary, and look at how they're able to match it. Everyone back there are ball hawks. Matthew can catch interceptions. Peterson can catch interceptions. Cromartie plays like a receiver back there. Buchanan, a strong safety that can catch the football, but they can also throw him in the box. Johnson, a backup safety that had a big play today, interception. And also Tony Jefferson, a guy that can catch balls as well. So they match up well versus anybody, tight ends, backs, receivers. And it's because they can do that. They can get extra aggressive defensively. So that's why Bowles is looking great. They have the personnel to get it done.
And you hold the good Lions offense is just 6 points, and Stafford, no touchdowns, one pick. And I know Luke's fantasy team not too happy about that. Drew Stanton, he's done the job. is this Cardinals team for real, and can they go to a Super Bowl with Drew Stanton?
It's tough, man, because when you look at Drew Stanton, you look at Brian Hoyer, you look at Matt Castle, you look at those type of guys, they can play well, but can they sustain that success? That separates the Drew Stantons from, let's say, a Carson Palmer, you know, and so, or even a Tom Brady. I hate to go over the top, but that's the difference between those guys. Can you sustain that success? I don't think they can, but they can play defense. They can take the ball away, which gives you an opportunity.
So when do they get out? Where do you see this Cardinals team going? Are they going to the NFC Championship?
I think they get there. They have a defense because, again, anytime you can turn the ball over and not only just get the ball back, they have guys that can bring it back to the house, Cromartie, Peterson, and Matthew.
Cromartie, the guy that the Jets wouldn't pay $3 or $4 million. I mean, less million than the amount of children and wives and baby mamas that he's got. But we don't need to get into that. The Packers roll all over the Eagles. I mean, they just made it look easy today. Mark Sanchez, don't blame him because they gave up 53 points. I said Packers-Broncos before the season, my Super Bowl pick. This Packers team's rolling in that offense. Emery is unstoppable.
I need to see the Packers and the Cardinals play in the NFC. That's a game for matchups. We know the Packers go five deep at receiver, and that's where they beat teams. And we know I just named the Cardinals' entire secondary, so they can match up with every last one of those guys. That'll be a great game.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see Cromartie versus Nelson and Peterson versus Cobb. I mean, that could be an NFC Championship preview and one that I would love to watch. 8 o'clock, the Patriots and the Colts right now. The Patriots currently up 7-3 in that game in Indianapolis. Who's the beast of the AFC? Because I think these two teams are obviously, I mean, right now, the Patriots and the Colts are going to compete with the Broncos. Who do you like out of those three to be the top in the AFC?
I like the Patriots because I like the fact that they can play defense. Again, having corners that can match up with Revis and Browner, and they have athletic guys in the second level with Collins and company to be able to match up on the intermediate routes. And you know the media will give the Colts every excuse. You know, they're, what, 6-3 right now? Mm-hmm. And it's Andrew Luck doesn't have weapons. When they win, it's because he's doing so much with the offense. When they lose, they don't have weapons. So I don't think the Colts are that good of a football team. But the Patriots and Broncos will be in at the end.
Awesome stuff as we go around the NFL. And we'll close it out. The Knicks today, they beat the Nuggets 109-93. Just a complete awful, awful transition by me. But we only have less than a minute to go. Melo and JR both dropped 28. You know what? Before you panic on the New York Knickerbockers, everyone, how about you wait till Jose Calderon and Andre Bargnani step on the court, who work tremendously in the triangle, guys who could shoot, a guy who can distribute in Jose Calderon. The downgrade from Calderon to Larkin, you're talking about a NBA All-Star point guard and a D-League player, essentially, a third-string point guard in Larkin, whose only real big part of his game is his speed that he could get by you. But this isn't a running back. We're talking about a point guard. You got to be able to shoot. You got to be able to distribute. And Larkin can't do that. So before Knicks fans want to jump off the Empire State Building at 3-8, just remember, there's 82 games, and you're playing without your point guard and your power forward. And the Nets, they need an identity as we wrap it up here. The Nets don't have an identity right now. The offense stops when Brook Lopez gets the ball. Joe Johnson is calling out teammates. And ironically, the last 5 minutes versus the Suns, he takes every shot and turns it over four times. JoJo, shut your mouth. And the Mets, you love the Michael Kadire signing, 2 years, $21 million. Next up, shortstop. You can check me and Luke on SNY.TV podcast Monday and Tuesday. You can check Emery Hunt, F-Ball Gameplan, FBallGameplan.com. Go get his book there because he is the czar of the playbook. Great show today. Jim Fossil was tremendous. Emery was tremendous. Luke was tremendous. Brian was tremendous behind the glass. And I was okay. I was decent. I could have been better. But, you know, it was a good performance all around from all of us. Everyone, have a great Thanksgiving. Have a great night, and we'll see you next month.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.